Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Tripper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Roasting. Hey. No.
We are roasting. It's a rather warm evening here in Seattle, Washington.
It's not terrible. It's okay.
But we refuse to wear shorts, so yeah. We suffer more.
I was,
wait, that was an option?
Never was.
There's lots of pants here.
I just got back from being in 97, 98 degree weather in Oklahoma and Texas for 5 days. I wore shorts one of those days.
But they have central air because they're no fools.
I know. Air conditioning everywhere.
Yeah.
In fact, it's cold inside.
Yeah, it's like a freezer inside.
I had a customer the other day, and he was like, beet red and sweating. He's like, oh, I just came from Ohio. It's like 100 degrees here. This is beautiful. This is great. And I was just like, you don't look like it's good, man. But okay.
Get a drink of water, sir.
Water?
Yeah.
All right. So, hey, what's going on at Comic Sungeon Corner Comics these days?
So do you go first?
Oh, sorry. We're deep in our anniversary sale.
Anniversary sale.
we have sale.
So we're running the same time. So it's the 14th through the 28th.
27th. Yeah.
And it's going to be, for the dungeon, at least tons of back issues.
Yeah.
We do like the crazy thing where it's $5 or less drop to $1, $10 or less drop to $2. Anything over $10, get 50% off. We'll have dollar bins. We have
things
up the wazoo.
We'll have probably trades of various degrees of percentages off.
Yeah, a bunch of $5 trades.
Yeah,
stuff like
we're just
that.
Gonna, you know, everything must go.
We need more room. We've been getting lots of donations. So many donations.
Yeah, and
stop,
I know
being generous.
I'm probably gonna have a lot of stuff that's like out of print and things like that. So if you're looking for kind of out of print stuff from various things, I don't know if I'll have it, but it's worth checking. Mm-hmm. Usually, it's good to double dip on the sale, go to Comic Sungeon, and then hit up Corner Comics in Kirkland and make an adventure out of it.
Mm-hmm. And then as a reminder, we do have a guest signing with Alex Banquita. He has a new book out called Headless from Scout Comics. So that'll be on the 28th. And I really should have remembered the hours to that one. I want to say 12 to 3.
But it'll be on the Facebook page.
It'll be on the Facebook page.
Comic Extension. And I may have one at Corner, but I don't know. So just keep, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
And just check my Facebook page at the Corner Comics Facebook.
All right. And links to all these Facebook pages are, of course, in the underneath this episode if you are listening to this on the website. But who goes to websites to listen to podcasts? Mm-hmm. Go to perfectboundpodcast.com to find out all this information. We can't go any further, friends, without finally acknowledging the passing of one Mr. Rucker Hauer.
Yes. Many wonderful quotes when he passed away of his impactful.
I've just always found it extraordinary that last speech he had from Blade Runner was improvised.
Yes, it was.
It is the biggest takeaway moment for me from that film.
Yeah, it's very poignant.
You know? Mm-hmm. And do you know, Ben, because you and I both are huge fans of the film, not to say that you guys are not.
But, I hate it.
But anyway, let me rephrase all of that. I said that so wrong. Does anybody know? Did he script it? Did he improvise it in front of the camera?
I don't know.
From what I understand,
you have failed me, Ben Lawrence.
I feel that it was like the cameras were rolling and they just poured out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I heard that in like a making of, but mm-hmm. you know, I say things
I
that
like
are lies all the
that.
Time. Yeah. So believe like me at that. Your own peril.
Great. And Ridley Scott was like, oh no, don't use that. And then he was like, shut up. Keep it.
It is beautiful.
Do you want your director's cut, Ridley? Do you want to have the pretty little unicorn?
If you're going to have a unicorn, we keep this line.
If you want your legend pony, you will let this happen.
You know that last monologue voiceover at the end of the film that you hate so much? Let's think about this.
Yeah.
So IMDb says Rucker Hauer came up with many inventive ideas for his characterization, like the moment where he grabs and fondles a dove. He also improvised the now iconic line, "All those moments will be lost in time, like tears and rain." He later chose "All those moments" as the title of his autobiography. So, but it's not detailed enough to be like, if he did he just think of it in the moment when the cameras were on. Did he think about it like beforehand, like while they were setting up?
He thought it when he took a shower that morning. It was like, oh yeah, tears and rain.
When he was crying in the shower?
Yes. Yeah. Because he had to work with Ridley Scott, though.
Ben, did we ever make it to all the way through Hobo with a Shotgun?
Oh, I did.
Were you with me? I remember watching that.
But we stopped.
Did we?
Why is this coming up? Is he in that?
He's in
there. I don't really recall that movie.
No, there's an actual movie they made from the bogus trailer. From Grindhouse.
I watched it. I just can't tell you anything about it.
I couldn't either, but I remember watching it. We had to have completed it. I don't think I would have not.
I don't remember finishing it. It's like... It was a movie night we had.
Did you fall asleep?
No, I don't sleep. it might have been that I just was too tired and couldn't endure anymore. Yeah.
I had high hopes for that film, and it didn't hold up to it. So
the first moment where someone's like pushing a grocery cart full of body organs, and they're clearly made of rubber, and they go bouncing out of the cart and bounce across the pavement. I'm like, I'm out of this film. You just jerked me out of the film.
All right. So, Lady Hawk is another Rucker Hauer film that I remember from my childhood. And Matthew Broderick is in that one. And one of my friends on Facebook pointed out that both Rutger Hauer and Roy Batty died in 2019.
Yep. That's really amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, so goodbye, Rutger Hauer. Rest in peace. Chris, talk to me about this Marvel Summer event.
Events, plural.
Events, Marvel Summer events.
So usually there is a big Marvel event or something for the summer, and it's like, and usually we hope it brings in the money and it's successful or not successful, whatever. So Marvel double down, and they're like, here's six events or specials all at once. But here's the thing, it's doing a thing. They're doing their X-Men relaunch, House of X, Power of X, Power of 10, whatever.
Poten.
We have gotten a huge amount of interest in it. Mm-hmm. Got tons of people calling me for it. It is a complete hit, and the X-Men needed that.
Yep.
Next week we've got amazing, or last week, whatever. Absolute Carnage.
Yes.
And then we will have Marvel Comics 1000.
Yes.
And then I'm forgetting something else. But so we're going to have at least three or four major money books coming out. And I say money books because House of X, Power of X are $5, $6 each. First issue of Absolute Carnage is like $8. Yeah. And Marvel Comics 1000 is like $10.
Are these bigger than normal?
They are all a little bit bigger than normal. Yeah. I will also say every single one has at least 15 to 25 variants.
Here's
the thing: I've sold through most of the House of X variants already.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think I even gave you some of mine, and we're working through those.
And I just blitzed through the ones you gave me.
Yeah,
I got like nothing left almost.
Yeah.
So good on you, Marvel. You delivered.
And then they're going to be rolling out their new X-Men stuff in this August previews. They're rolling out X-Men number one, Marauders, and
Excalibur, X-Force.
Excalibur. Yeah. So all that stuff's just going to keep going and going. We'll see how it holds up.
Yeah.
And Hawks and Pox are still going as the stuff's coming out too, it looks like. Hawks is number six is in, I don't know. Yeah. You know, we just got through a previews. It was very traumatic. We're going to go into another one and we'll tell you about it later.
Yeah. So it's just an interesting thing for us that, it's not that we didn't want it to work because we desperately need to sell Marvel Comics, but they really have paid off on this one.
Yeah.
And we banked on them and thankfully that paid off too.
Yeah.
So
been hearing some excitement from X fans. And I've heard from other shops that people who had been out of comics are coming back for this event. So
I've had a lot of lapsed readers who haven't read X-Men for 10 to 15 years come back for it.
Cool.
Well, it's not been 10 to 15 years, but
you've been kind of on the outs.
You took your breaks, yeah.
Yeah, no, when they did the Secret Wars, I was like, I'm done, I'm out.
You came back during X-Men Gold, and we were all disappointed in that, so yeah.
I think you tried for a while, but it probably just dropped off.
I bought Gold number one after all the legal hoopla about that, I was like, this is really boring.
Yep.
Yeah.
You did not entice me back at all with
Regardless of anything you could say about this new Hawks Pox, it's not boring.
Great.
It's got a lot going on, yeah.
So we're supposed to read Hawks first, then Pox?
Yeah, it's alternating every other week, and that's how it's designed to be read.
It's the Kirkman sister title.
He loves them titles.
Okay.
So
well, I'm really looking forward
to
it. Maybe I shouldn't be elevating my expectations.
Yeah, we'll probably. I think
some Tourette's happening over here. God, now. What's going on?
I keep flipping Kirkman and Hickman, and then they just merged him into Herkman.
Yes.
Sounds like you got something stuck in your throat.
Yeah.
Herkman.
Oh my goodness.
Comics Tourette's is me just randomly being
lost all control.
It would probably.
Did we lose audio? Did my snort blow us
no,
out?
No, we lost your minds. We lost our minds.
Don't make me turn this podcast around.
Turn it around. Leave us at the gas station. Whatever you need to do to survive.
Marvel events, Hawks, yes. Claws.
So they're good.
It may be worth it to actually do some discussion, us all reading it at some point.
Well, why don't we do a table?
A round table
with the next
Once you've gone through some stuff.
20, 25 issues to talk about?
Well, yes, at least 25, and exactly. There'll be enough to dive into.
We'll be broke. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Broke, and yes. Yes.
All right, cool. Okay. I'm writing that down as a topic for next week.
Dude.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers are teaming up with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, I've never really been a fan of the Power Rangers because I think I'm a bit too old for them, but TMNT I'm quite fond of.
And MMMP. Mighty Morphin Power Ranger.
MMPR.
MMPR and TMMNT. Mumpertumtum is what it is. So I'm a little too late for the Power Rangers as well, but I wish I wasn't because all the new comics from Boom, they have one of my favorite artists working on them, and they look like they're a lot of fun. But I try reading them, and I'm like, I don't know these people or I don't like these people because they were pretty hokey when I did see them when I was 14, 15.
And yet, the fandom...
It is hardcore.
It is super hardcore, and... You know, I'm looking at people's photos from San Diego and whatnot and taking pictures with their favorite Power Ranger actor. And I'm like, I can't begrudge that. Nope. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. It made those people, it was part of their core development and their beliefs about themselves and the world were Power Rangers. And I remember when the new movie came out, I had a friend who's a bartends and at Solo Bar, and she was beside herself how bad it was. She was really angry and frustrated.
Really?
She was really looking forward to this movie because she grew up with the Power Rangers after school every day.
High expectations. Big, of really fulfilling.
And she just and what she railed about tonally, I get with. Because it was similar to what I get upset about other things, but I could not relate to her particular angst.
Right.
I respected it, but I could not relate to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it, and it has its faults, but I actually thought it was okay, but then I also had to apply that thinking.
Yes.
I talked to one of our customers who's a major fan, and he was like a good 50-50 on it. He wanted to allow its badness for like other new generation stuff. So I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, so for the comics, I'm probably going to read this because I want an excuse to read the Power Ranger comics, and the Turtles might be that excuse.
Maybe it'll translate this time enough for you to enjoy it.
I'm mostly hoping that Rita Repulsa will make Bebop and Rocksteady grow into giant monsters.
That would be great.
If that don't happen, then...
It's just a foregone conclusion that that's going to happen.
Right?
If it don't happen, somebody needs to hire me, is what happened.
Obviously.
It's going to be written by Ryan Parody. He says, honestly, I'm pretty certain keeping this project a secret has taken years off of my life. But it's coming to Boom. It's coming from Boom. Number 105 is I don't see a release date here, but look for it soon at your local comic book store. Another property, the Guardians of the Galaxy, did something interesting lately. They named their new ship the Bowie, and they have permission from the David Bowie estate, which I think was pretty cool.
Bowie's
in
space.
Oh my god. It actually
brought...
Get
yourself an eye patch.
Get an eye patch, man. Get a funky, funky eye patch.
Anyway, it did
bring somebody into Corner Comics specifically who knows nothing about comics, but they just thought it was really, really cool. So I thought that was interesting. I didn't even realize that was a thing that had happened. And I was like, oh, okay, I will get some on the way for you. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that was just a quick little fun thing that happened.
And some Flight of the Conchords for you, just because. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And finally, Katie O'Neill, a New Zealand creator who, Nicole, one of Nicole's favorite, apparently.
We love her.
She did the Tea Dragon Society, which is a lot of fun. Yeah. Dewdrop is a new property of hers for early readers.
It looks adorable.
Oh my God, it's so cute.
It's the story of an axolotl, and if you don't know what an axolotl is, look it up, who cheers on his friends as they each bring their unique talents to a pond sports fair. It aims to teach children the values of friendship, teamwork, healthy competition, and community. I'm actually looking forward to reading this.
Dewdrop is an easygoing, gentle axolotl who enjoys naps, worm pie, and cheerleading.
Yep.
Aren't you sold on this now? I am.
I had a bunch of customers, so I couldn't remember the name of this, but I had like three different people coming in today looking for Tea Dragons. And I was like, she's got a new project. Like, what is it? Like, everybody has just like, tell me now.
We are all.
And I was just like, I don't know, but it's adorable. They're like, sounds right.
It sounds right. Yeah. I need 5 copies now.
Exactly. Yes. So it's going to be dropping on April 2020, which is not that far away, friends. It's already August of 2019.
Her Tea Dragon book, her prequel is going to be coming out soon. I don't know when, but sometime in 2019. So we pretty much get a Katie book once a year.
All right.
And some games, too. There's games.
The Tea Dragon Extended Universe, cinematic universe.
The Tea Dragon EU.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's the news for today. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And let's start with me. My good friend Chris Cousseau gave me a book, Philip K. Dick, A Comics Biography, from NBM Graphic Novels. And I finally sat down and read it. It's a pretty quick read. It's because, I mean, Philip K. Dick had a pretty interesting life. He was kind of, he was a bit of a psycho, to use a coarse language. Yeah, he was a bit of a Philip K. Dick. And there's only so much of the man's life that you can put into, and I'm frantically looking for the page numbers for the last page, that you can put into, oh, and there are no page numbers. Oh, book, you failed me. Into, I'm just going to say 150 pages. And it's a pretty clean looking book. It pretty much lays out the milestones in his life from him. It starts off at him watching like a director first cut of Blade Runner and meeting and talking with Ridley Scott and saying that he loves it. But then it goes on, and then he goes into the hospital. And when he's in the hospital, we basically go through Phil's life from birth, his schooling, and a lot of the bad decisions that Philip K. seems to make along the way. Mm-hmm. And in reading this, you just want to root for him as he's making all of these bad decisions. And it's at one point it kind of feels like he's a bit of a Da Vinci, because not a Da Vinci, a Van Gogh, because he doesn't seem to be getting the recognition for his books as he's writing all these science fiction books or science fiction short stories and submitting them to magazines. Near the end, of course, he gets a little bit of that, but it seems like throughout the entire thing he's always trying to scrape away some money. But I didn't know a lot about the man himself, just broad strokes. And this book told me a little bit more, but I don't know. Like, again, there's only so much you can tell in 6 to 9 panels per page for 150 pages about an entire life of Mr. Philip K. Dick. But it's highly recommended. Even if you have not read any of his novels, you have most certainly seen, if you know, you didn't even know it, a lot of his books on film. Blade Runner, of course. Minority Report is another one of them. And there's one other really popular one, so the name escapes me at the
moment.
Total Recall. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, you probably know Dick's work if you... Oh, yeah, it says they're right on the front. And you know his work, even if you don't know it, you have seen his stuff. I would recommend checking it out. It's... it's a pretty quick read. It's $30. It's you could probably sit down in an afternoon and and discover what this man's life was like and kind of root for him along the way as he makes bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Chris Cousseau, what do you got?
So I do that thing where I place orders in the order form, and I'm sure I had some sort of logical reason for doing that. And then I see the invoice a week before. I'm like, what the hell is this book? Why did I order 5 copies of it? And it comes in, I'm like, oh yeah, good job, pass me. And so it's a new book from First Second Press, and it is by written by Vera Greentea with art by Yana Bogach. And it's called Grimoire Noir, and I love the title. And also, Yana Bogach's artwork is absolutely fabulous and amazing, and you should look her up right now.
She has
Tumblr as well. It's just look up Yana Bogach. So basically the story is there's a small town where it's full of witches and nobody can leave the town. It's supposed to be a safe haven for them, but it's also a prison. And the main character is a young boy named Bucky, and his father is the town sheriff, and his sister has been missing for a day or two. And when his mother cries and grieves over the missing daughter, she causes storm clouds, because every witch in the town has a different charm, a different particular ability. And so her sadness is causing the town to slowly flood. So the series is following Bucky as he's slowly trying to figure out where his sister is, because his dad's hands are tied by the bylaws of the town. He can't just randomly search certain people's houses. The witches have extra protection over some of the other people. And so you get pulled into an interesting cast of different characters. There's a local coven of young high school girls, or grade school, middle grade, I don't know. I can't tell ages in this book. And but they're some of them are kind of suspect. Bucky's old best friend, he's not really talking to anymore, her name's Chamomile. She's kind of keeping an eye on him, trying to protect him. So it's just lots of interesting angles and developments as you get this like kid PI story. And a lot of just really heartwarming characters as well, and just cool ideas about witchcraft. So it is kind of a done in one story, but there is an opening for more to be told with this world. And I really hope they can get back to it, because their voices are just unique and very, very enriching. So it is a $17.99 soft cover. It's a good chunk of reading with beautiful artwork.
Cool.
Grimoire Noir.
Grimoire Noir. Thank you, Chris.
And it's fun to say, too.
Yeah, indeed. Cole Hornaday, what do you got?
Well, I went out and probably spent more money than wisdom allows, but I bought the second volume of The Art of Mike Ploog, or The Art of Ploog, Volume 2. It's a hefty, beautifully produced hardbound volume that ran $49, not counting shipping. And now I have both volumes. And I was looking at this online going, gosh, am I really that big a fan of Mike Ploog? I mean, I have most of his artwork, but I never consciously gathered. I mean, most of the comic books he drew, but I never, you know, like made a conscious effort to collect them. That just sort of happened by proxy.
You just saw Ploog and you were like, yes.
Yeah, well, or they just happened to be books that I cared about, like the Marvel Frankenstein and Man Thing and stuff like that, that appealed to my sense of monsterishness.
Your Ploog sense was tingling.
So this book is really just kind of, I hesitate to say it's more the same as the first volume, but the first 200 pages are essentially just reproductions of many of the stories he did from the 70s into the early 80s in their entirety, I do believe. And they, you know, not unlike the IDW, what did we call them? What are they called?
Oh, the artist editions. Yeah, it's a pretty popular trend, and other publishers have started doing them. So I could see him being like, I want in on that.
Right. So in a lot of cases, you're getting his pen and inks and blue line from an entire issue. And that's great. I don't know if I needed that, but frankly, what I really wanted was more information about his film work, and I was very pleased that in the film chapters, there's at least 20 of his charcoal and pastel illustrations that he did for the opening sequence of Ralph Bakshi's Wizards, which is one of my favorite things on film in all of reality. And they just pan over these illustrations, and there's this narration by a woman whose name escapes me, and I wish I could remember her name. And it's creepy, and it just gets me on a visceral level. And right now, sidebar, Ralph Bakshi himself is actually selling this original work on eBay for thousands and thousands of dollars. And I got into a bit of discussion with someone about how I wish these would be in museums rather than being sold to private collectors. And this individual said, no, actually you don't, because if it's in a museum, who knows what's going to become of it, and it's not going to be seen by the public. To give it to a private collector, it'll probably be treated with greater honor. And I'm like, okay, I'm having trouble with both these options.
That's an interesting point, because I did hear a statistic recently where it's like, you know, a museum only shows like 2% of its collection at any given time.
Wow. Yeah. Some of it could be rotting in a corner, and then they don't pay attention.
Right, you know? And you know a collector who has bought these will cherish them.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of his film work, but also I also had to have some of these film storyboards, and I don't want to take up too much time, but I'm going to. So like the storyboards from John Carpenter's Thing and Jim Henson's Dark Crystal, and you look at these storyboards and production designs, because I love production designs, and you go, oh wow, that's a cool idea, and look what it became on film. And sometimes you go, oh man, they nailed that. Yeah. They freaking nailed that. That is so amazing. And then films that never got produced, like Master and Margarita, Chinatown. Roman Polanski had planned to do an adaptation of Mikhail Bulgakov's Master and Margarita, which is one of my favorite Russian novels, and it never happened, but the storyboards are in here. And,
nice.
And I love stuff like that, but there is this film. There are these storyboards and production designs from this film called Lone Wolf and Cub. It was supposed to be produced in 1987, had nothing to do with Japanese culture at all.
Really?
It is a steampunk style Western.
The title is just a pure coincidence?
Oh no, they took it intentionally, but they just,
oh, I see.
But it's Hollywood, so I'm sure somebody, some film studio said, yeah, that's great and all, but no, we're not doing samurais. We're gonna do cowboys.
People love cowboys.
Yeah, and yeah, Ben, you got to look at these illustrations. They are out of control. But yeah, no, there are no. I don't think. There are, okay, I am seeing people in samurai garb, so maybe it was, you know,
Lone Wolf and
Cub come to the United States, come to the Old West. Bad idea. Was never produced. But anyway, so I'm glad I have this. And let's face it, it's got a low print run. And in another 10 years, both volumes that I paid a considerable amount of money for are probably going to be worth five times that. And I'm going to be glad that I have them. Also, they're really heavy, and you could bang someone on the head and knock them cold as ice.
How I judge
willing
books.
To sacrifice our love.
Yes.
Is there going to be a volume 3?
You know, I hope not. Because I think, I can't afford it, and B, I think that between these two volumes, I can't imagine there's anything more that his fans really need to see.
It's just like
go push
Pluga
down some stairs so that way there won't be a third, and then that you'll increase the value.
There you go. There
I mean,
go.
I love it, but if
only
there's a third,
murder.
I'm going to have to like tap them brakes. So. Yeah.
All right, The Art of Plug, Volume 2. Thank you, Cole. And finally, Nicole, what do you got for us?
Sorry, Chris was just doing this little sassy shimmy thing when he was like, only a little bit of murder. It was just like really cute. Threw me off my game, which I have none. Anyway, so Magnificent Miss Marvel by Saladin Ahmed, Minku Jung, lots of other people, very important. I wanted to wait until I had read the first arc of this, but I didn't have time. So I thought that it was still a good point to review issues 1 and 2 because my thought about them changed between the two issues. So the first issue, it just rolls right into Kamala's life and how things are going. And then, you know, bad guys show up and she's trying to do the same, you know, thing. She's Miss Marvel, whatever. It didn't really quite work for me because there was a lot of like kind of derivative animal things. Like there was almost copying stuff that's come before, but not in a bad way. But it was just kind of a dudder a little bit, and I was a little disappointed because I was like, I really like Saladin, and I really wanted to like this, but I was like, maybe it's time for me to just like this is a good stop point for me with Miss Marvel. I'm trying to trim back, there we go, like what I'm bringing home, because being a manager of a comic book store apparently takes a lot of time or something, and I'm just not reading stuff. And then I was like, you know what, let me read issue 2 and let me see, you know, how I feel. And it got to some relationship stuff. There's a dramatic thing that happens at the end of issue 1 that ties directly into issue 2, and it propels forward Kamala and like what her motivation to try to figure out what's going on. And you get some Bruno action in there and their relationship. And then there is some really cool cliffhanger on there that takes her in a totally different place that she's never been before. And that to me was kind of the selling point. It was like, oh, okay, maybe I do have to give this a little bit more of a try. To my disappointment of my budget and everything else that I want to spend money on, I am still going to follow The Magnificent Miss Marvel. And I think there's an annual that came out in 4 and 5. I think 5 just came out. So
yeah.
One of these days I got to carve out the time, but I flipped through some of the other issues and it still looks really interesting. So so for now, I think that Saladin is doing a good job keeping it going. For something that's run for so long and had a writer that specifically was doing it, you know, it can be an uphill battle, yeah. Right, with that kind of stuff. And
are you reading Marvel Team Up starring Kamala?
No, I read some of the first issue and I enjoyed that. But again, I was like, I can't.
Yeah.
I got things and stuff. So yeah, but it looked really cute. The Marvel team up idea, I really love teaming up with different people. And right now it's Captain Marvel and her, which is really cool.
Yep.
So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. The Magnificent Ms. Marvel. Thank you, Nicole.
Yes.
Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by the Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. Our live show is coming up. We are deep in production for the current episode that we're filming called, what's it called, Cole?
Say it loud.
So look for that at thepaneljumper.com sometime in the near future, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show however you like at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, the questions come to us from me. Holy kaboom, Batman. These superhero names could also double as Batman 66 on-screen sound effects. Number 1. Whenever young Billy Batson speaks this wizard's name, he is struck by a magic thunderbolt that transforms him into an adult superhero empowered with the abilities of 6 legendary figures, or the sound made when Robin drops a bust of Abraham Lincoln on the Riddler's foot.
Shazam!
Number 2. The daughter of magician Giovanni Zatara, she made her living as a stage illusionist prior to discovering her true magical abilities while investigating the disappearance of her father. Or the sound an arrow makes as it slices through the air and lands in the wood paneling right next to Catwoman's head.
Zatanna!
Number 3. God of Thunder, son of Odin, this Asgardian's name is the sound made when Batman shoves the Penguin through an open door.
Thor.
Number 4. Both Terrence Stamp and Michael Shannon have played this DC supervillain in the movies, or the sound that's made when Batgirl kicks Two-Face in the crotch.
Zod.
And finally, number 5. This character is the son of Hulk and Kyera the Old Strong, conceived during the Hulk's time on Kyera's home planet of Sakaar, or the sound made when the Joker punishes one of his fumbling henchmen.
Scar
is correct. That is quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.